Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the 90 Day Fiancé Wrap Up Podcast. We're here today to talk all about Season 9, Episode 16, a.k.a. The Marriages Part 1, because I believe we're on the precipice of the finale now, with next week serving as the finale to the season, followed by 2 weeks of tell-alls, most likely on the road to Happily Ever After, not them being happy, just 90 Day Fiancé, the Happily Ever After. So we'll get there when we get there. But of course, I'm here to break down all the nonsense that happened in episode 16. I am your host and conductor of the Hot Mess Express, Puyazan Mikili, back once again. Now with me today, I have a guest who has been on this season once before. She is one half of the Mess Magnets. She is one half of the Never Have I Ever podcast over on Silent Podcast. It is the one, the only, Sasha Joseph. Sasha, how you doing?
So good. You know, imagine me walking down the aisle for this podcast, because this could have been an email, but here we are to get a whole episode and then another episode about this said email. And apparently folks that just don't understand what 90 Day Fiancé means.
Yeah, I feel like, you know, the show, especially OG 90 Day Fiancé, really makes a big stink about the wedding. It's all about the wedding. And then when we get to the wedding, they don't show any of it. And it just kind of is a fleeting moment on your screen, which, don't get me wrong, I'm fine with, because I feel like outside of Elizabeth and Andre and drama from their wedding, I don't see any couple making a stink like that. But it really does feel like it's a disservice to put these into separate episodes instead of just shooting it out in one big episode to just end the season.
And it's an hour and a half, Puya. Like, what? But no, we needed one more prank to get us through to the next week.
Isn't that what Dua Lipa's saying about? One prank is all it takes.
You're right. And one prenup is all it takes, actually.
Yeah, there's a lot of ones with Bilal. Mm-hmm. By the sounds of it. Yeah. So we have got, this might be a short episode, but I don't want to call that shot. And then it ends up being a long one. Who knows? With the two of us, no one ever knows
that part. Cause how long did it take us to start this?
Oh yeah. I mean, let's let them know if you're listening right now, we'll let you know. We were supposed to start an hour 30 minutes ago. And we've just been chit chatting. So goes to show what's going on over here. Let's kick it off though. Let's talk about Patrick and Thais to start things off today. We kick off the episode with them in Miami. They're 3 days away from getting married. And Thais is not feeling this right now. She's like, you know, in Brazil, I stayed in one place. Here, I feel like we've been jumping all around, which if you do take note of what she's saying, they've been to first Austin, then Dallas. Then they ended up going to Nevada. Now they're in Miami. They're going to end up in Orlando. Last week, they were in, were they in Boston last week?
They're Massachusetts. Yeah, right? Massachusetts, she said, I think.
So they've done all of this, and now they're in Miami on the last pit stop before their wedding destination, aka Orlando, and they're here for just one day, and Patrick is taking them to a boat party that his friends are throwing as a wedding present, but she just wants to spend time with her man. And I don't see why 16 episodes in, Thais still cannot get the one thing she's asked for, which is let me be a part of the decision making. Whereas Patrick's made it out like a thief with getting everything he wants.
Because money, because nothing else makes sense. Right. I love that his friends call him Pat. None of this is clicking for me, because first of all, she's saying, hey, let me be part of this. He's just gonna steamroll her. Okay, fine. I'll let that go. Now let me be a part of this. Nope, steamroll time again. She gets nothing out of it. And I think in his mind, he's like, but you're leaving your third world country to come to me. That must equal, you know, I'll throw money at the problem and it's all good. So he's pissing me off at this point. And I really wanted to like him, because he's, I think, one of the only people that knows their partner's language, but the bar is in hell, you know, for men that, oh, he knows a damn language. How cool is that? But she, oh my God, she, I don't know about you, Puya, but I felt like she was held hostage on that boat.
Oh yeah. I mean, and that's the thing, is the language, him knowing the language might be his only redeeming quality based on everything we've seen, the more and more we get there. And to me, the way I feel about it is that, you put her on this boat with your friends. You're out jumping around in the water. Like, if my partner takes me out with their friends, I'm more likely going to stick to the partner until I get to know the friends. And a simple day at a yacht is not going to help, especially when I'm dealing with a lot of indecision with regards to where we're at, because we're not clearing our problems. Instead, we're just doing random stuff here and there, which is something she did bring up, is that obviously since she's talked to her dad, her decision is very much cloudy and up in the air as to whether or not she wants to go through with this wedding. And it doesn't seem like Patrick's bothered by that at all.
No, he's literally jumping for his life, like living, doing whatever, living his best life. Meanwhile, Miss Gucci, I think her name's Tammy, the friend, is like at least listening. I don't think Thais has felt heard, at least what we've seen, right? Like, I don't think that someone has been like, yeah, that's really hard.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry.
That's the biggest problem she has with Patrick when you're talking about the bar being in hell. All she wants is to be heard and for her to be part of the decision making. That's all she wants. And she's not getting any of that. She obviously does have the two friends she met at that house party that John threw once upon a time. But besides that, she still doesn't have anyone around her. So the fact that Tammy on this yacht decided, I will listen to you, I do appreciate. But I'm sick of Patrick. I'm sick of the way he's going about this stuff. It's like very nonchalant. I don't care. You literally made her tell her dad when she said it was going to be a bad idea. She is now in a bad spot. It's in her head. She doesn't know what to do. And here you are doing backflips off a yacht.
Because for him, right, that's what works. Where he was like, oh, dad doesn't know. Now you told dad. That means it's all good on my end. Like, F what you think. Because none of her family's coming, right? So it none of it matters to him because it's out of sight, out of mind. And also, I forgot that he was divorced, or I didn't even know. I was like, wait, he's married already?
Yeah.
I'm confusion.
It's the he got divorced because him and his partner at the time were both into weightlifting, and then he got banned from the sport, right? So they separated. That's why John moved in. That's how we got John into the story.
So here's the thing, Patrick. No, Pat, as your friends call you.
Postman Pat.
Get your life together, because you had one divorce, and probably because you just steamrolled everything. And then guess what? And you know what? You were doing drugs, okay? You were making bad decisions then. You're making bad decisions now. And this poor girl has left her whole family to be with you, and you are giving her nothing. Like, literal nothing.
And it's like you said at the jump, where it really feels like Patrick thinks if I throw money, it's like literally throw money at the problem. Like, oh, I'm providing, which gives me carte blanche to have things done my way because I'm the one putting in the money to the relationship, which is the most short-sighted and incorrect thing I've ever heard, and really makes me feel confused as to how he did have a wedding in the first place to have the second one now.
Probably because he comes off as like, again, I learned the language, you know, like he probably comes off as like
with some effort
normal. Yeah, that he's trying, and then he baits and switches, and it's like, actually, that's all the effort I'm going to put. That was all I had. I think you are confused, because at this point, he's like master. I don't even think gaslighter is the right thing. Like, I just don't think he gives two F's about any of this, where he's just like, no, this is who I am. And then, also, I forgot, he throws his like family trauma in our face. Like, we don't have family trauma. Like, we all do, boo boo.
Yeah.
That doesn't excuse your like horrible behavior, or to say like, okay, you know, I have like, we had, you know, issues with housing or whatever, and that's why John stays. But now I'm going to work on that because I'm now bringing a new human into this life. And John is a douche. It's not like John is so nice to her.
No, I mean, John has been doing nothing to make efforts into fixing the problem. And I feel like part of me is like, well, it's also Patrick's fault, because Patrick has let it be the way it is, in that when it comes to John doing, you know, being nasty, making comments or planning stuff without telling them, Patrick's never stopped him. So why would John do any different when his brother isn't telling him it's not okay? The brother's saying it's completely fine. So that is definitely part of the issue there. Now, if you're listening to this and you're thinking, but wait, You two sound very upset, but you haven't told us a lot. So what's causing this upset? We'll get there. So they end up having a dinner for two after this yacht party. Okay. And this is where I started getting very irritated with Patrick. Yes. Because, you know, Thais brings up, yeah, well, listen, once again, you made a decision and we just had to do what you want to do. And I feel like I have no voice in this relationship. To which Patrick says, I don't know why you feel this way now. Like, you could have said something earlier. If you said you didn't want to do it, I can do some things alone. And she's like, that's not the point. The point is that, what do you mean alone? I'm saying that I want to have a say and I want to have my opinion followed through with sometimes, AKA, when we get married, I would like for your brother to move out. That is something I would like. And I'm not going to, you know, shy away from that. That is my decision. And he says, now, I'm not going to get rid of him right after we get married. I'm going to give him at least 3 months. And she's like, well, listen, this is the proof right here. I said, I want John to leave. You said no. But if you say something, we have to do it. To which then he says, it's a complicated matter. And I thought, well, wasn't it complicated for Thais when she said that telling her dad she's going to get married to you could cause problems and she knows better because it's her own dad, but you had to force her to do it essentially by just bringing it up constantly and irritating her to the point where she did it. So the hypocrisy is definitely showing for me here with Patrick.
Yes, and that's exactly it, where he sees nothing beyond his lane or his, you know, field of vision, right? Like, he's like, this is my life, this is who's in it, and this is how they're supposed to act. Like, he's the puppet master or something, and like, other folks don't have feelings, or Thais doesn't have feelings, because when it comes to his family, they all have abundant feelings. And, you know, John can't move out because family is an integral part of my life. And it's like, he's like, I have to give him 3 months notice. But how does John not feel any shame to, like, constantly be living off his brother? Number one. And then secondly, like, what if they have kids? If that's something they want, then like, what? It's going to be like one big super joint family. Like, I don't get it. And if one partner doesn't want that, I just wish Patrick would like grow a backbone. Or maybe like the drugs like mess that up, but just like stop, you know, just like take a second and get your shit together. Like, I'm so irritated. Like, every time he's on my screen, I'm just like, he looks like Johnny Bravo. And like, I can't.
Yeah, I feel like part of it isn't that Patrick doesn't have a backbone. It's that he clearly doesn't want to get rid of John. And yeah. I feel like a lot of it is rooted in what happened with his family in the past. But then also, I think the divorce and having John be the security blanket there helped him get over the divorce. But then it's from the beginning of the season when he was like, you know, what if me and Thais get a divorce? I don't want to go through that again. It's like, but so what? Does John just live with you forever? Because that's not like, that is not you showing confidence in this relationship whatsoever. So that is not okay. But at the end of the day, relationships are built upon compromise. And it's very clear that she compromised with moving to you. She compromised with not cutting ties with her family, but like going away from her family. Mm-hmm. She compromised when she told her dad when she didn't want to. She compromised when you said you want the wedding done a certain way. She compromised when you didn't want the house decorated with paintings and vases. So when is it your turn to compromise? Because so far I've not seen it. And the one thing she wants you to compromise is, yeah, how about your brother moves out? Well, she's not saying never talk to him. He can move out and be in a neighborhood nearby. He can move out and be in the same city. Like, that's not, you're still going to see each other because you work together. So I really don't think she's asking for too much here. And I think it's just simple as Patrick wants it his way.
Yeah. And that's why I feel like, going back to what I was saying, yeah, is that like he uses his trauma as a crutch for just like doing whatever he wants. But in reality, I think he's pretty stubborn and doesn't necessarily see her, Thais, as a contributing member of said relationship.
Yeah. Yeah, I 100% agree with that for sure. Now, as far as the rest of the dinner combo goes, it's more of the same, really. She said, well, you know, maybe my dad's right. Maybe I shouldn't get married. And he's like, well, if you think so, we shouldn't get married. I don't want you to do anything you don't want to do, which I have problems with the way he phrased that, but I'll move it along so that we can move it along here. The next scene, the final scene we see with them, is actually the last scene of the episode where Patrick comes up with this idea of, you know, I feel like I, in order to help Thais and to help move this along, maybe I should call her dad and, you know, talk about what they talked about the other night and try and reason with her dad and make him feel more confident about us. And that might make Thais feel better. And finally, Thais was like, this is actually a pretty good idea. I like this. Give it a try. So he calls the dad and he's like, you know, I want to have a good relationship with you. And I want to make your daughter happy. I would like your blessing. And the dad was like, no, you don't have my blessing. I do not approve. Quite honestly, Thais, I don't like this sincerely. I do not mess with this at all.
I almost fell over.
He did not blink.
No, he was just like, what are you talking about? Like, no, this is not happening ever at all. And the reason I think I find it funniest is because they, you know, I feel like Patrick and all these folks are like, how lucky that Thais gets to marry, you know, and like they've thrown that around, right? Where they're just like, oh, is she doing it for the green card or is she doing it for this and that? And it's like, it couldn't be more obvious that she isn't.
Yeah, I feel like that's been made abundantly clear. So that's kind of where we left them. Mm-hmm. And then the next time on is just following through with the rest of that conversation with the dad, which doesn't go well. He just basically says that he's disappointed in Thais. So we'll see, like, that's going to leave Thais in a hard spot, but I don't know where we're going to go with them, because the next time on with them doesn't show a wedding, but I'm assuming that the finale is next week simply because of the way the rest of the couples are about to get married. So unless they do what they did with Jovi and Yara, where like there's a whole half that's just about Patrick and Thais, I think that's where we're going to end it with them. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I mean, I think that makes sense. Like, I think they're all heading toward wedding. And I think, unfortunately, a lot of these partners are just giving in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like I'm looking at the schedule for TLC. So next week, obviously, they have 90 day. The week after, they also have 90 day, but it doesn't say what. It doesn't have an episode description or anything. So I don't know if it's going to be tell-all. I don't know if it's more of the same. Hmm. So we're just going to have to wait and see here as to what's coming for these episodes, because I couldn't tell you right now. I simply could not. Okay, let's take a quick break, Sasha. When we get back, we're going to talk about the next couple here. We're going to jump in and talk about Jibri and Miona. All right. We're about to keep it very short and sweet with Jibri and Miona, because the show kept it very short and sweet with Jibri and Miona. Now, they're a day away from the wedding, okay? And we find out that Miona's the one that set up the entire operation. She found the Airbnb for them. She found the wedding venue. And Jibri's very proud of Miona for putting, like, yeah, for figuring all this out. And I just thought to myself, Jibri, you really had no idea where you were getting married? Like, I think he just wanted to get married in the same city because he didn't want to bother looking at places to get married.
I'm telling you, like, I just don't understand Jibri. Like, we like him, obviously, but also I feel like he's such a child. And I don't know that he's, like, of this earth.
I mean, he is different gravy for sure.
Yeah.
He operates differently. I mean, I think, you know, Chappelle has always had it right in that they clearly love each other, mm-hmm, which is great. But it's very difficult watching someone who is so bad with decision making and so relaxed, but also so stressed at the same time. You can't be relaxed and stressed. It's got to be one or the other. I don't know how you're doing both at the same time and how I'm watching it play out, but it is wild to me.
Yeah, and it's like, and you're in Joshua Tree, so it's not like an easy thing that, and because that's in California, from, and like they've driven from South Dakota. So what do you mean?
Yeah, give us the answers, please, and thank you. We see that Jibri's grandma has also arrived now, because she will be officiating the wedding, which I think is very sweet. I'm very happy to see the grandma involved with the festivities. And then we get one more scene with them. And this is Jibri calling his mom and talking to his mom. Oof. Sasha, can you break it down for us here?
Oh, my God. So here we go. Jibri FaceTimes his mom, right? And he's like, first of all, I'll even dial it back because he talks to his grandma. And he's like, hey, you know, do you think somehow they'll surprise me? Wink, wink. Or do you know, like, time is running out. Maybe they'll come on a flight soon. And then now he's finally talking to his mom again. And this is the most mental gymnastics thing I've ever seen because he's like, he FaceTimes his mom and she's like, it doesn't feel right that you're not here. And then she's like, yeah, I also want to be part of important events, but I just can't make it. I just can't make it. I have to protect my heart. What?
Yeah, she's like, you know, me and Jibri have we've had such a close relationship.
Yes.
That when we're apart, like when he's in another city or something, it doesn't feel like we're apart. But right now, I feel like I have to protect that distance to protect my heart, which I was like, what does that even mean?
And then she's like, are y'all dating? I don't understand.
She's like, I don't really have a choice. And all I thought was, first of all, you totally do, because all of that to me said that you're not saying, oh, I have work. I can't make it because of work. To me, this sounds like it's difficult, but I have to teach him a lesson by not going. And like, I have to show that I'm not okay with this wedding. And then that came even more around because Jibri was trying to end the phone call with, so I have your blessing, right? To get,
yes,
get married, I have your blessing. This is a thing. And she was like, you know, I support you and I love you. He's like, so I have your blessing. And it took him a lot to get her to say it, which should be a huge red flag to Jibri.
That's the thing, right? Like, she's a therapist or a psychologist. And the games this poor child is getting put through by his parents, not just his mom. Like, I don't understand it. And then the back and forth of like, but I have your blessing. I didn't say that. But maybe. But I support you. But this and that. And I was just like, just fast forward this because this is disgusting. And like, I don't know. You know, this again is one of those moments where I feel like it went past the 90 day fun and it went into like, no, she's just like manipulative as hell.
Yes.
And he's just constantly looking for her approval.
Yeah, which is very difficult to watch, right? Because from where I'm standing, these are two, you know, lovely kids that want to love each other and they just want to be together. Mm. And obviously, while they both have their faults, and we've been very clear in highlighting those throughout the season, that at the end of the day, they're here for each other, which is all we can ask for when the bar is very much underground. Now, the problem is that if Miona was nasty to them, was disrespectful, was argumentative, was yelling at them, any of those things, I'd be like, I get it. Because we've seen some of the other couples of 90s past be, you know, bad with the families and it makes sense. You know, Ari and Binium have their whole thing with Mimi and Wish. So I would get it. But she was very nice. She was very respectful. I feel like she had that one-on-one where she was coming from a genuine place to try and sort things out and keep the peace. I feel like at this point, just tell your son you don't like Miona and move on, because what you're doing is worse. You're letting him do what he wants to do, which is good. But also you're trying to keep this facade of, oh, we're okay with it, but we're kind of not. And, you know, it's manipulation 101. He's 100% being manipulated by his mom and it's going to impact him. Jibri is a feelings guy. He will feel feelings. And my God, the guy said, I don't know where he's got this money from, but he was like, if I get you an overnight ticket, can you make it? And you said no to his face. Like, he's not going to go to sleep happy tonight. Yeah. My heart broke for him in that moment.
Yeah. And like, it's, you know, breadcrumbing. That's what she's doing.
What is that?
Ooh. So breadcrumbing is literally like, imagine Hansel and Gretel, right? Like, you're leaving breadcrumbs. So you're giving them enough to follow you and you're not entirely ghosting them. But that doesn't make it any better because you're literally only leaving breadcrumbs. So they like are hanging on.
But that's it. No. So it's like the step before ghosting.
Yes. It's like, oh, I'm a good person. I'm not a ghoster. But in reality, I'm actually worse because I'm giving you just enough to keep you. And that's what she's doing.
Is there a positive version of breadcrumbing? Because, like, for example, you know, we all live on the internet. There's a big internet age now. And so therefore, we have a lot of friends now, you know, in different places around the world. I typically, with my friends from back home, like, I'll send a message here and there, interact here and there, little by little, not a lot, because I don't have, like, the time.
Yeah.
Is that breadcrumbing too, or is that a different thing?
It depends, right? Because are they asking for more? That's the thing. I think breadcrumbing is when I think one person, like a jabari, is like, no, like, I want this. Or like the other person is like, can we hang out? Like in a dating sense, it's like, can we hang out? You know, or do something. And you're just like, no, I'm really busy. But I'll send you this meme.
Yeah, no, 100%. No, I see the clear difference now. Yeah. Because Jibri's mom could just cut him loose and say, exactly. I don't approve, but exactly. It's doing the middle and the bare minimum to keep it.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Not, see, that is heartbreaking because that's worse. Like purgatory in any relationship interaction is worse than a clear cut. We're good. We're not good. It really is. Because the mind wanders, especially if your mind wanders like Jabriz does. So,
and it's your mom, right? Like, I feel like any other relationship that's not parent, you can kind of get over, you can replace with time. But I think when it's like your family, like you only have one or two of, you know, this.
Yes.
So that, true. I think, makes it harder.
Yeah. And, you know, again, it's he's about to get married. His grandma's there and he just wants his family with him. And it's sad that he's not being given that little bit that you're saying you support him, but are you supporting him? The answer is no, because you don't support it. And, you know, it's upsetting.
Yes. That's why I'm like, just pick a side because I'm over it and I'm over her. And Joshua Tree is beautiful. So I'm really excited to see their wedding.
Do you think they're going to be matching?
They have to.
Yeah. Will he allow
anything else?
They weren't really matching this episode and I thought something had gone wrong.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Yeah. I mean, as in, like, you know, are they both just going to get dressed in like matching denim jackets?
Right. Because we know that she went gown shopping. So like, seems like she has some kind of a traditional white dress.
Have we seen his suit or what he's going to wear?
No, I'm assuming will he wear white with like a white cowboy hat? And then like the shoes could be shiny. But he's so out there that like, I could see just the jacket being completely wild.
Yeah, I could definitely see that as well. Now, let's move on to the next couple here because, my God. Speaking of wedding dresses and wedding outfits, let's go over and talk about Bilal and Shaida here. We simply must first talk about the wedding dress before we talk about what happened before with Bilal and his daughter, because Shaida gets called upstairs by her sister-in-law, aka Bilal's sister, who is a fashion designer who was tasked with designing the dress. And she gets brought up, eyes closed, it's a surprise, and she gets shown this wedding dress that is not what she had asked for. It is not what she wanted. She wanted a more form-fitting, nice, beautiful dress. And she got a dress that she described as a more traditional, old-school design that she did not like. And this is fine listen, I don't like pranks like this, period, especially with something serious. But this still could have been fine to me, Sasha, if the prank was, yeah, it's just you know, this is the dress. And she's like, this isn't my dress. She, this isn't. Oh, okay. I'm kidding. This isn't your dress. But some of the extra comments are what threw me off when the sister was like, you know, sometimes the customer doesn't know what they need. And like, you know, you wear some clothes baggy, so I thought I'd make this baggy for you. I was like, you're taking it a bridge too far. What is up with the Bilal family and taking it a bridge too far with their pranks? Why? Why do they make it personal? I hate it here.
And oh my God, and that's exactly it. First of all, the PTSD I was having, because like my seamstress had messed up my dress. Well, I bought the dress and then she was like, yeah, I can like do the alterations, no problem. And then messed it all up. So first of all, why are people messing with people's wedding dresses? That's my number one question. Okay. And then secondly, after that, it's like, I love the, I almost said gibberish. Shida even caught it. Yeah. She was like, you know what? The last prank happened. It was something sentimental. So maybe I will not drag and say something rude about that dress. And then she said, yeah, you shouldn't, because that is a sentimental dress. Get a job. Get a life. Cause why are y'all like, you literally have nothing better to do than prank her with stuff that's actually sentimental. And then, Puya, don't you think if she would have like gone off the rails or said something, then they, then his family would have been like, look how rude she is. Oh, she can't handle anything.
They would have held on to that for years. It would have been added into the prenup before she signed it, being like, yeah, you cannot be disrespectful. If a prank happens, you must let it happen, or something stupid like that. Because they did that with the whole house switch prank, and they would have done it with this. I love that Shaida was like, let me play it a little safe. Mm-hmm. I did like that quite a bit. Because ultimately, close your eyes. Oh, I'm kidding. Here's the actual dress. And the dress was beautiful. I was happy to see that dress.
Yeah.
But yeah, if someone doesn't, here's a PSA to anybody. If someone doesn't really like pranks and you've now learned that, don't prank them again just because you like pranks. If they don't mess with pranks, don't prank them.
Or then be okay with the consequences of said prank. Like, you don't get to say, hey, I'm going to prank you the way I want. And then, but you also have to respond the way I want. Like, that's ridiculous.
Yeah, because, you know, with Bilal and Shaida, Shaida was play fighting with Bilal that one time, and Bilal was like, you hit me. Like, that is not what that was, sir. No, she hit me. Has she done it since? No, because she knows that's not what he likes. So maybe you also don't do what she doesn't like. That would be nice.
But that's the thing, the hypocrisy in this whole family. And I can't believe she's happily marrying into this.
Yeah, I will say we did see Bilal interacting with his daughter earlier. Mm-hmm. And I absolutely adored Zaina, the daughter. She was very supportive of Bilal getting married. She said that, you know, she was honest, like, this is kind of different, but I'm getting used to it. And I'm just happy to see that my dad is happy. And that warmed my heart. I love that. So she is allowed to be here. I'm happy with her in the family. Mm-hmm. Okay. So she's good. And I guess her brother, the little brother, also good, even though we didn't see him this episode. Now, in the next scene, and the only other scene we saw, actually, Shaida's two younger sisters are here now for the wedding. The rest of her family, unfortunately, will not be able to make it because the borders in Trinidad are closed once again. So they're unable to make it to the wedding. But Sasha, I thought what the sisters had to say was very interesting to me.
Yeah, because here's where the sisters are like, what's up? Right. Like, what's going on? They bring up the prenup again, which I appreciated. And then they talked a little bit about, if you want to get out, we're here for you. And then they talked about the baby as well, which I appreciate. But here's my question for you, Puya.
Yes.
And this will, I know, come up next week. So I'm jumping forward because I don't know that nothing else really happened in this nail salon scene. But is he the kind of guy that'll keep saying yes, breadcrumbing her, and then just never give her the baby?
Honestly, I could see that. I think what was key in this scene for me that kind of got me a little bit worried, because obviously last week it looked like, okay, it's settled. He's going to add the stuff to the prenup. They're going to sign it. They're going to move on. But then when she was like, he's going to add it. I haven't signed it yet, even though the wedding's tomorrow, but I'm going to get it and I'm going to sign it. But yeah, I think I might just read it again. And they were like, yeah, 100% read it again. To me, I want her to read every inch of that paper, because the fine print is going to be very important. Now, as far as him having a kid, we have literally not seen him say with chest that he would be excited for that. Anytime he has talked about having another kid, it's felt very much like he's trying to sweep the conversation under the rug and quickly move on to the next thing. So to answer your question, is he going to breadcrumb and then never deliver? I do think that could happen. And the problem with something like this in the prenup is, this isn't the prenup. If he violates that rule, right? If he doesn't do that, mm-hmm. is it like monetary compensation? Because I don't think there's enough money in the world for Shaeda to be happy and okay with that. Because at the end of the day, she wants to bring life into this world and she wants to, you know, like explore motherhood. And that is more
before
important
40,
than anybody.
Which is a big deal.
Yeah. So I hope he's not doing that. I hope he gives her what she wants and does so with passion and with absolute like support of it. But I really don't know. I feel like anytime we've seen him talk about it, it's given me a lot more doubt than anything.
Yeah. And he just seems like the kind of guy that would like do some like use birth control, vasectomy, whatever, and then blame it on her. You know,
oh, that's why it's Sasha.
I'm telling you, it just, he seems, oh, I really don't like him. So I'm praying for our girl because she seems to love him. So maybe I'll be okay with him.
Yeah, I'm very curious with their journey now because obviously they've just leaned on the prenup talk forever. And then obviously at the tell-all when we get there, I'm assuming 90% of it is going to be about this prenup. So we'll see where they're at when we get to the tell-all. But as of right now, I'm happy that Shaeda feels confident now that the prenup stuff's sorted. But as a viewer, I'm still very much looking at Bilal with a lot of doubt. So we'll see where they take off there. And like you said, that's really all we got in this segment mm-hmm. with the family. So let's take us over now to Emily and Kobe, who had more of an appearance on the show than some of the other couples, but that's not saying much because we're already on couple four and it's been 30 minutes. So Emily and Kobe, Sasha, what are your thoughts on where they've been since you were on episode 8?
I'm so over these people. Like, again, could have been an email. But anyway, Emily and Kobe at least are giving us some drama, right? Like, they're giving us some variety. We have a little pregnancy. Like, I'm into it in that I'm grateful that we're getting drama. And also temperature. What a guy, right? Like, I was getting real frustrated low-key with him because I was like, you can't say, like, man's head of the family because that's just not how this relationship works.
Yeah, temperature just came in head first, no yes. thought, and just spewed every thought he had without filtering himself, which didn't help the relationship. And it sounds like it's put some more doubt in Emily's head, because now the plan is they're having a gathering at Emily's grandma's house where it's the night before the wedding and they're having a huge party type thing. And Kobe's going to meet the entire family, basically. But all of this is happening with this pregnancy secrecy that they have. And God bless him. Kobe just wants out of the secrets. I feel like Kobe, after the conversation with Emily's dad, really wants to respect her father and the family and feels uneasy about harboring a secret from them while living under the roof, especially when the secret is something that there was like the one rule they were not supposed to break and they're broken, right? But she has no interest in revealing this at all. She says, I don't want to do it until the wedding is done, which we all know why. But then she says, don't worry. I've figured out a way I'm going to deal with this. She's bought non-alcoholic beer to drink at the event so that no one will doubt her, being pregnant because she can just drink the non-alcoholic beer. Now, do you think she's going to put a beer cozy on it? Do you think she's going to tear off the label? Is she just going to put it in a, because she was drinking out of a bottle at the event. So I'm trying to think, what do you think is the way she's going to hide this?
So they had koozies.
Oh, that's it.
They had personalized koozies.
That'll do it.
Yeah. So I'm assuming it's that one. And then secondly, so she's smart enough to buy non-alcoholic beer, but not smart enough to use a condom.
Ugh, I don't have a bell, but I would have hit it right now. That was, yep. It's not lost on me, Sasha. Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean? Like, first of all, I didn't even know non-alcoholic beer existed. Like, why do you need the calories?
Yeah, it exists. 100%.
Just drink, like, juice.
The non-alcoholic beer, I've never had it, but, like, I don't think I would like it.
Yeah, I was at a party a few weeks ago and like there were a few pregnant people. So I was having tequila shots and they were having non-alcoholic alcohol shots. And I was like, I hate the taste of alcohol. So why would I want the taste without any of the effects?
Is it the action? You know, when you're kids, like when we were kids, the parents would sit at like the dinner table, mm-hmm. and then the kids, we had like a little setting on the floor, and then we would all cheers our Pepsi glasses.
Yeah.
We had learned that that's a cool thing to do. So it kind of gives off that energy. But then also for me growing up in the Middle East, there was this malt beverage called Barbican, which was flavored. So it's like a peach flavor. It's a little fizzy. It was tasty, but it was tasty. If I'm just having a plain beer, and I think, you know, I don't know how many brands are out there. I'm assuming more than just O'Doul's, but there's got to be more. I don't know if it's for me, but also again, Sasha, the whole point is she has to play the facade. If she's drinking a Pepsi, they're like, what's up with that? Why are you not having a drink?
Coke at this point? Like, my God.
You know, I didn't even think of that. You could be like, yeah, I made a mix.
Yeah, earlier. I'm telling you. It's just, but again, we know like that much forethought is not her forte. It's just everything about it, right? Like the poor girl isn't even fitting her, like, her beautiful dress from Cameroon that Kobe has brought for everyone, which I have to say, shout out to like Emily's family for just being so chill and being okay with wearing, not being okay, sorry, that's rude, for like embracing wearing all of that. And then like them going into the house with masks on and everyone just like hugging and be like, wow, this is beautiful. I love these outfits. Like, that was really nice to see.
I agree 100%. You know, we've talked about how, you know, we feel for Kobe. Mm-hmm. He's completely in a new place and he has no reckoning. He's looking at Ohio because it might get him closer to a community that he feels close to. So seeing everyone not only just embrace it, but also ask questions, be very supporting and try and learn. I absolutely love that. I love seeing the dad wear stuff. I love that they were all so safe about everything. Again, do you know that this is the same family that I didn't like? Because it felt very, very odd the way they were handling Kobe. And now it's just Emily. Now we're just left with Emily that I don't like. Everyone else has gotten a pass at this point. And is on to the next stage. They're going to, if this was American Idol, they're going to Vegas. Like they went
from Get Out to like a normally awkward family from Kansas.
Exactly. Basically. The upgrade yes. right there. Now, Emily goes outside and she's like, oof. I feel uneasy and I need to go outside real quick. And she has a lot on her mind. She tells us, you know, she mentions that, the whole thing with Ohio and then the gender roles conversation has been making her question things, which immediately I thought the gender role thing came from temperature. If Kobe's still doing what he's doing, that hasn't changed anything. He looked up some places in Ohio. How dare he look at other places potentially to want to live? Again, relationships are built on compromise. Now, she brings up some of these concerns that she doesn't really know, she doesn't trust. And Kobe says, listen, we were separated in China and then we went through all this time and I came back here for you. How do you feel unsure about me? Because she said something about like a year from now or something. And I think he took that as, what, do you think I'm just here for a certain benefit or something? That's very insulting to me. I was like, talk your stuff, Kobe, because I totally get what you're putting down. I'm picking it up.
And it's about time, you know, like drag her ass, because I'm so over it. Like her own family, I think, look, I don't know if you've noticed, but they look at her like she ain't shit, you know, like that's how I feel. and that really hard and weird architecture conversation that Emily's dad had, I feel like it was more that, oh, sorry, like we didn't raise her well, so now you have to.
Yeah, with the money stuff.
Yes, I remember money, that. Yeah. So that's why I'm just like, this poor guy is like, there's not probably one black person in this whole town. And he's like, hey, I want to be around community too, because humans are communal creatures. And then from what we've heard from Kobe and his family, right, like back in Cameroon, this is a huge part. Like they're very communal. So for him to just come and be like, yeah, I'm here and I have nothing and I'm fully dependent on someone that like can't even take care of me, right, it's her family taking care of us. So that's why I feel for Kobe so bad, because he is so in over his head and she just like gives zero Fs. And last thing I have to say about her and Ari, why do these people keep saying 90 days wasn't enough? Do they understand how math works? And two, what's the point? You're supposed to be sure before you bring them to said United States. This 90 days is just for you to prep for the wedding. It's not for you to decide if this person is for you. Like, and this is like my issue over it, season after season. And this chick, Emily, with her nonsense about it's the eve of the wedding, right? I think that's what Kobe says, where I've left everything to be with you and Coben. And then he's like, if you can't trust me at the eve of our wedding, like, I can't accept that, F off, and period.
Well, that's the thing, is that when you look at these relationships, first of all, we've said it before, we'll say it again. The 90 days isn't a test. The 90 days, you got the approval because you had to declare that you were getting married. Like, so that was already happening. Second of all, the other partner was so sure 90 days ago that, first of all, they went to the interview at the embassy. They got the stamp. They got the plane ticket. They flew over and they have spent the last 3 months with your family. They cannot be more sure that they want to be with you at that point. So for you to say that, oh, you're not 100% sure with 89 days down, yeah, I can see why he's very mad at you. That is not okay. And obviously, this also stems from the fact that he bought the ring for her after he knew she wanted it, but then found out that she bought another ring. And then he had to pay for his sins of saying the F word one time in front of her. That invoice was very long. And he's also had to sleep in a bed alone because she said the bed wasn't too big for them all to sleep in. So there's a laundry list of things that he's had to yes and or okay and move on with.
Yes.
He is sure he wants to be with you. Through all of that, he has been sure he wants to be with you. That hasn't changed. So when you're coming in with this question, of course he's going to feel insulted. He basically said, yeah, I've had enough. F off. Gosh, leaves. Now, I joked about this last week. He said it again in front of her, Sasha. He said the F word. Mm-hmm. Is this going to go down as a non-forgettable? I think so. But I will say this time, Emily did look a little more concerned. So I could see her trying to fix this moving forward. But I want better for Kobe. I said it. I want better for Kobe. In the next time on, Kobe tells her, yeah, you're sitting here hiding secrets from your parents and you want to talk about trust?
Period. Like, drag her.
Kobe did not hold back there. He really went full send on that one.
And here's my last question, right, about these two. Mm-hmm. So you want to have two kids, right? Not one with this human, but you don't want to marry them. Aren't kids like way more like permanent? Like, this person is in your life forever.
Yeah, like, part of me wants to chalk it up to, you know, this is production getting them to say this because the show is supposed to be like suspenseful in these moments. So I'm willing to give a pass on that. But then there's some stuff that I feel like clearly, because she could say that in confessional and it's all well and good. It's fine. It makes sense. But when she's saying them, and then to Kobe, that to me is a little bit more permanent than I'm not sure. Showing doubt to Kobe isn't like, Kobe's not like, okay, let's do the scripted stuff. Like, that's not what Kobe's going to do in my opinion. So I feel like, again, it's just super insulting to Kobe, to Coben, to baby on the way. So make your minds up, figure out where you're going, because you don't have a lot of time. We have two episodes left. Let's get to it, please.
And they've just been like, he's just been taking and taking and taking from her, taking it and not saying anything. So I feel like sometimes you just have to put people in their place or they're going to keep running all over you as she has done to her whole family. Like, she runs everyone. So I'm glad he stood up for her. I don't care. It's not even, I don't even feel like he was rude enough.
Yeah.
I said it.
Yeah, we'll see what happens now. I'm excited for the wedding where it's her family and temperature. I want to see how that plays out because that could be fun. That could be the redeeming point here is their whole wedding ceremony. So let's see if we get there by next week. But for now, let's move over to another wedding that I just don't understand what this is. Okay, so Ari and Biniam are getting married and We start with Binyam is shaving or cutting the hair of his father-in-law, Fred. And they're doing a Jewish wedding at a temple. And this is done because Bini agreed to compromise. This is for Ari because Ari allowed them to baptize baby Avi. So that's what's happening. But then, like you mentioned earlier, we did get a moment where Ari talks about how 90 days isn't enough and like maybe more time would have been better to decide stuff. And I literally thought, if there's any couple that can't say this, it's you two. Because yes, you've pretty much gone through 4 seasons and 18 continents together. Different countries you've lived in and dealt stuff with. So you can't have doubt. I don't believe this. I think this to me is production saying, say this. Yep. Because that is wild to me. If you still are like, I'm not sure, given everything that's been going down. And then they had their wedding, which was pretty sweet. Sasha, I thought it was nice after all this nonsense.
Yeah, it was a very like bare bones wedding, I will say. I mean, they had a beautiful chuppah, and I think it had, that it had, you know, everyone like Ethiopian touches and Jewish and all of it. Also, I will say that's one thing I think Ari's good at, right, is like showcasing his culture.
100%.
Yeah, so that was also really nice. I was just, like I said, very surprised at how bare bones the temple was and the wedding. But maybe because it's 2021, I think I saw on someone's like thing that maybe, you know, COVID was an issue, whatever. I don't know.
I think the other part of it, too, is the whole financial burden of things.
Right.
Given that we've learned that they have to pay the rent now that they're in this place.
But they're influencers.
I mean, I feel like 90 day influencers is not the same as like a Love Island UK influencer. True. Though. It is a different league, unless, you know, there are a couple people in the 90 day world who have gone on to gain a lot more fortune from their influencing.
Yeah.
I don't think Ari and Binyam are one of them, though.
No. Okay. I agree. Fine. I see that, too. I'm just like, my God. And also, I felt like his sisters, I feel like that's the big headline when she's like, yeah, I guess I'll allow them to come. That's their family.
Yeah, she actually said that she was considering no, but then found it in her heart to let them get the Zoom link to the wedding. I was like, it's a Zoom link. Give them the Zoom link. Why are you being like this? So,
you know, she wanted to get one last jab in.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, she brought up the wine again this episode. So that was definitely.
Which I was like, we know that was fake. Shut up.
So, yeah, that's it. They got married. Yay. Yeah.
Which yeah. I was like, they aren't married already. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, there's a couple of these couples. I was like, were you not married? Okay. Anyway. All right. We move on to the last couple of the night here. Eve and Muhammad. Sasha, the world has turned upside down, and somehow Eve and Muhammad are the best couple on this show. I don't know how. I'm sorry to break the news to everyone. They're the best couple on the show right now. I don't know how this happened.
I don't know that I agree, but I understand you.
Well, tell me why.
Cause me thinks it's green card for him. Like,
I
don't think he's gonna divorce her necessarily, but I just, how can you have a brain transplant? Like, hey, you know, your mom, like, is this smothered that his mom is like said one thing and then it's done? I don't get it.
Yeah, I mean, it's the power of the immigrant mom. Like, it hits. Like, let me tell you, yeah. Especially if you're very close with your mom. Like, it was very clear to me that he had called his mom last week to be like, hey, so this is the problems in the relationship. And mom could have said A, B, C, D. And he would have been like, you're right. You know what? I'll do it. I mean, we're watching it happen with Thais in real time. Her dad said no.
Yeah.
And she's struggling with the idea of going through with all this. So with him, if she had said, no, yeah, she should, you know, dress more conservatively or respect our traditions or follow through with our traditions. And he would have been like, that's what I'm saying. Okay, I'm going to stick to what I'm doing. But mom gave the best answer in the world, which was, yeah, do not push your traditions on her. That is not her traditions. She can do and should do and should be allowed to do whatever she wants. And you just got to love and support her. And it really, it's like, unclogged something in him.
Yeah.
Because remember, this is the same dude who essentially said, if we don't get married soon, I will find another sponsor. Or I'll go back to Egypt. If you don't do this, I'll go back to Egypt. If we're raising a kid and the kid's not Muslim, I will not have a kid. So there was a lot of layers and barriers he was putting up, and he's pushed all of them down. And that's why I'm happy to say that I feel like they're the best couple now, because like you said, obviously there could be a bit of a facade to it, but I feel like given how much of a rigid person we had met,
right,
and given how open he now is, I think part of him realized that if my mom is saying this, then, and my mom is someone who follows the traditions and does X, Y, Z, and she's saying, no, that doesn't have to be the case with Eve, then I need to be more open and I need to be more accepting. And again, it's like we're seeing two different people. Is this a twin twist on 90 Day? Because
I'm telling you,
this is a different Muhammad, Sasha. This is a whole different couple from like the last 14 episodes.
That's why I was like, he's either doing it for the green card or, you know, his friend was like, actually, you cannot get another sponsor. So this is it, boo boo. Like, I was gobsmacked at how normal he was acting, I will say. But also, I feel like I can't drag Muhammad too much because Eve was giving very much, and I think because she's giddy about her wedding day, it was like a little bit like teenager vibes. This episode where I was like, okay, grow up, please. And what did you feel about like his traditions not being part of it? I feel like that's what was missing also.
Yeah, well, the only part of it that was there was they danced to some Arabic music afterwards. So to me, because what he said was, while they were doing everything, he had said that, you know, this is for her. Like she wanted to, because remember, he was fine with just courthousing it and he didn't really care. The date mattered more than the venue and the wedding to him. So I think this was one of those instances where he was fine putting it aside for her. And I think like that little gesture with the dance was like all he really wanted. And obviously we've now seen weddings where like with Ari and Binyam, or like with Emily and Kobe, where there's a little bit more of the culture of the counterpart being featured. But I didn't see any of that here. But I think it's 100% because he wanted this to be her day and not to meddle with it, which again, I know sounds ridiculous because this is the same Muhammad who wanted all of that to be a part of their lives and now was fine with it not being there. But dare I say growth? I don't know. I don't think I'm naive for believing him, but I also feel like I'm naive for believing him because of how quickly it happened.
Right. I mean, I'll allow it, I guess, but not
my permission.
Right. But like not with lots of skepticism, because like I said, something is not right. Like, how did he change so quickly? Because we went from like leave, just go back home. This is not for you.
You two do not belong by the second time we saw them.
Yes.
And here we are.
To like dancing together. And being okay with it. Because she even said, this is why something is like holding me back. Because she even was like, yeah, I don't know if this outfit will be good for him. Maybe it's too revealing. And he was like, yeah, I don't think I would have picked this outfit. So that's why I was like, how can they live the rest of their life like this?
Well, that's the thing, is that he said, even though she's not wearing like a Muslim dress, I don't care anymore. I just want her to be happy. Which I was like, that's amazing. I love that. Now, I feel like there's obviously going to be places in the relationship, on the journey in their wedding where, or in their marriage where, you know, he'll be like, oh, that's a little too revealing, or this, that, whatever. I think that'll come for sure. But do I think that he's let go of the hold he had on all of that with her and like trying to put her in that standard? Yes, I think that's gone now. Look no further than the fact that he was dancing with all her friends there.
Yeah.
And he hated these friends like 3 weeks ago. So
if she was in Egypt, she wouldn't be hanging out with these people.
Yeah. Oh my God.
I was like, okay.
The sweetest moment of the episode for me was watching Theron put on the suit and then walk down the aisle with the suit off because he didn't want to wear it anymore. I was like, Theron, I feel you. It's too much. Suit. Yeah.
It's a lot. Like, yeah. I bet they took pictures and, you know, they had to probably do so much. That poor kid. I didn't even want to wear my dress by the end of it. I was like, oh, I still have to like walk down the aisle. Got it. Shit.
Yeah. And we've skipped over the first scene we saw with Eve and Muhammad, which was Rochelle, Eve's friend, basically saying, you know, I was a runaway bride at some point. If you ever want to leave this, don't worry. You're allowed to and I'll be there for you. But we knew everything was going to be fine the minute the reproposal happened. It was very clear that Eve was very happy with what she had gotten with Muhammad and everything was good moving forward. Everything was fine with them. And and again, Sasha, to me, there's not enough incentive in the world because Muhammad loves his mom. So for Muhammad, if he was not going to be happy with Eve and was not willing to compromise with Eve, he would have just gone back home to mom and he would have been fine with it. But he's staying in the States now. He openly says in her face and says, you know, I made mistakes and I, you know, realized if I didn't compromise, I would lose her forever. Mm-hmm. And I made mistakes along the way and she still loved me through it all. I just think his mom opened his eyes. I really think that it's genuine. I really do.
I mean, I'll side-eye it, but like I said, I'll allow it.
Yeah. I mean, we need someone to be beautiful this season. I would have bet my like entire earnings that it would have not been even Muhammad. And I would have lost all of it. I would have been the cartoon guy in a barrel walking around because I didn't have clothes on my back because I bet all of it that this wouldn't be the case. But here we are.
I'm telling you, I can't believe it. I really couldn't. God.
Yeah, and clearly they're not going to be on the... So yeah, the next time on, we've already talked about Jibri and Miona are going to have their wedding day. Bilal and Shaida are on their wedding day. Emily and Kobe are on the wedding day. Patrick and Thais are in purgatory. And that's the four we saw. So again, all of that leads me to believe that this is the finale next week. And then the week after, we're going to have 2 weeks of Tell All until we start Happily Ever After, which premieres Sunday, the 28th of August. On TLC. Now, Sasha, before we head out, we have one more business to take care of here, and that is the power rankings. Now, when you were here for episode 8, this was the power rankings. I'll tell you, and then we'll go about switching them around. So in episode 8, you had Bilal and Shaida in dead last, even Muhammad in fifth place, Emily and Kobe in fourth, Patrick and Thais in third, Ari and Binyam in second, and Jibri and Miona were the number one spot.
Oh, wow. So I really have never been around for Guillermo.
You've missed it. You've missed both the podcasts. Cara, you've not gotten to talk about them. Oh, but also, God. The show didn't give us much to talk about. So.
Agreed.
Yeah.
Who was second? Ari? Or were they first?
No. First was Jibri and Miona.
Yeah,
second
that's what was I thought. Yeah. Okay. Oh, my God.
So who's last now? Let's talk about that. Who's in last place?
I think either Pat and Thais or Bilal and Shaida. What do you think?
Yeah, I feel like Bilal and Shaida, while I do not like the Bilal family pranks company, and I'm still a little bit worried about this whole prenup thing, I think at least the two of them are happy with each other, which is all I can ask for. Whereas with Patrick and Thais, Patrick has done nothing to show me that he's trying to change. So, and if he is, he's doing it very late. Exactly. And Thais, I feel my heart breaks for her. She's like in such a bad spot between a rock and a hard place. Do I pick the man that I love? Do I pick my dad? My dad isn't, you know, approving and caring for me. My soon to be husband doesn't compromise with me. So it's a tough spot to be in. So I think for that, I would put Patrick and Thais last if those are your two. Mm. Now, I would go as far as to ask, why is Emily and Kobe not in your list for bottom?
Yeah. I don't know. I think because something about the like, that patriarchy conversation, like I think I just, it edged Emily out. A little, because I was like, yeah, I think
you agreed with that.
I just feel like he could have done a little more to been like, hey, I'm just going to let him talk because that's just how people in Cameroon speak. You know, like I needed something from him. You know how we get mad at Ari? Mm-hmm. At Binyam for kind of like omitting stuff. That's why I was like, no, like you're amazing. I just needed you to say it. That's why I feel like they're not last. But you know what? Maybe they're second to last. That's why I don't, yeah. Because maybe Bilal and Shida need to go up one more.
I agree. Let's put Emily and Kobe in fifth. While there were parts of the relationship that I loved seeing, aka with Kobe interacting with the family, I feel like these two still need to sort out this one big piece before they get married. And they're literally getting married the next day.
Yeah. So
figure stuff out. Stay in fourth for now. And then fifth. And then in fourth, we'll pull Bilal and Shida, who we've already talked about exactly why they would belong there. So that's an easy, we can move on to our top three, which includes Jibrin Miona, Even Muhammad, and Ari and Binyam.
Okay, I think Ari and Binyam have to go down.
To third?
Because I'm just kind of over them. Like, they're just like irritating.
I mean,
like enough already.
The reason they were first in that eighth week was because we said, you're the most established couple here. Surely you're just going to get married and it'll be fine.
Exactly.
So that's fine. I'm fine with leaving them in third because, again, they're just middle of the road. They're not moving really. So middle makes the most sense. That leaves us with Jibrin Miona and Even Muhammad. I do not see how we put Jibrin Miona in first place. They did not do anything this episode to me. Like they went to the venue and then the grandma showed up to officiate. That's going to happen. But ultimately their relationship is still tough because Jibri has the mahala. His mom has this hold on him, which he's not been able to completely break through from, but I'm happy that it's not breaking his bond with Miona.
Yeah. So for me, I think I could make a reason for them to be first because, like I said, Muhammad side eye versus I think at least Jibri and Miona, we know that them two are, you know, good with each other. That's why I want to give them first place because I'm just like, I think that they love each other. And grandma officiating the wedding makes it feel like it's real.
Okay, I'm fine. One of these episodes, my co-partner on the journey, my co-host on the journey, will give me Even Muhammad first, but that might not be today. That's fine.
Yeah, I don't like I said, it's too much baggage. That's why. Like, I'll be honest.
It really gives me a similar energy to the Big Brother season this season where the first couple of weeks were absolutely traumatic and now it's gotten good, but it's like, I haven't forgotten what happened in week one and two, dude. Like, that's still there in my mind fresh. So I definitely hear you there. Even Muhammad second, Jibri and Miona top spot here. Wow. One more episode, episode 17, and we should be done. Sasha, thank you so much for going through this journey with me, albeit a short one for the podcast, but I'm really happy when I have you on here with me.
Oh, I love being here. 90 Day Fiancé, like I said, first home on RHAP. So always a joy to talk with you.
And of course, I will have you back when your favorites, Jenny and Sumit, make their appearance.
We decided it was Chappelle's favorite.
Yeah, you two share a podcast. Never Have I Ever on Silent Podcast. You can also share a favorite. No,
that's a lie, but still.
Well, Sasha, where can people find you and what else do you have going on?
You can find me on Twitter at funsize_04 to know everything else I got going on. But the biggest thing is Mess Magnets, baby. I have a podcast about celebrity gossip, honestly, vibes only, lots of mess that's going on in the world. It's like celebrity sports, a little bit of all of it, all the mess, with Kirsten McKenna. So you can check that out over at robasapodcast.com/messmagnets. Go subscribe to our feed. We're trying to get renewed. Help us out. And I'm covering Survivor South Africa over on Silent Podcast as well, where we're talking, I think, the best franchise of Survivor, which is Survivor South Africa. So it's been an absolute joy to cover that. We did weeks one and two. Oh my God. It's like, it's one every week, y'all. It's a lot. One every day, I mean.
Four episodes a week?
Yes.
They're wilding.
But it's so much fun, y'all. So even if, like, check out that podcast once you're done with Shannon and Mike Bloom's podcast as well, over on Silent Podcast. And I'll be on Big Brother this week talking veto. So can't wait for that. Thank you so much for having me.
Of course, Sasha, anytime. You're always welcome back aboard the Hot Mess Express.
Period.
Whenever you can come around. y'all can find me on Twitter at Puyaism. You can find me on Twitch, twitch.tv/Puya. I do stream there 2-3 times a week. Come through, say hi, I would appreciate that. As far as any podcast I'm currently doing, this is the only one this week. Psych, I forgot. I'm doing the roundtable this week on RHAP. Oh, yeah. So come through and see how I rate the house guests for this week and how the stock watch is going to look. I will also be back to talk about the live feeds Friday morning. That'll be very fun. I'm very excited for that. From last week, I did do the premiere episode of Snake in the Grass with Rob and Mary. That was a lot of fun. And also I was on Nothing But Netflix to talk about The Gray Man with Rob and Chappelle. So you can check that out as well. Last but not least, if you could leave a rating and review, that would be much appreciated. It allows people to find the podcast. It allows me to get some feedback from you on what works, what doesn't work. 5 stars are appreciated, but hey, go with what you feel. I'm hoping it's 5, but it is what it is. You can do that over on robiswebsite.com/90dayfiance. That's the number 9, number 0, day fiance. Now we have arrived at the destination for this podcast. As far as Love in Paradise goes, I will be back in just a minute to talk about that with you, catch you up on the last 2 episodes. And until then, take care. Have a good one. Bye. Hello and welcome back, everybody, to 90 Day Fiancé Wrap Up Podcast. We're here to talk about everything that went on in the last 2 episodes of Love in Paradise. Should be pretty short, based on what I watched. I think we're in the middle of the season, it feels like, so the episodes kind of just move the plot along a little bit. But alas, we're here to talk about it all. I had a great time talking to Sasha in the earlier portion of this podcast. So let's move over and talk about what happened in these 2 episodes. So first up, we've got Sherlon and Ariana. Now, if you remember, just to give you a refresher because it's been 2 weeks, Sherlon and Ariana have a son named Odin. Ariana has been raising Odin on her own while Sherlon has been in Jamaica. And now she is in Jamaica, but there's this disconnect between the two because to her, it feels like Sherlon is not romantically involved with her and mostly cares about Odin only. And this is a problem they're having, but they're having a dinner with both moms present. So Sherlon's mom, Joanne, and Ariana's mom, Karen, are both going to be at this dinner. Now, when conversation starts and they start asking, you know, how's everything been with you two? How's everything going? Ariana tells his mom that, you know, things could be better. I feel like he asks about Odin, but he doesn't ask about me. And that when it comes to talking about serious stuff, he pulls away. He doesn't talk to me about it. Doesn't let me communicate with him. To which, you know, Sherlon says that he doesn't like hearing the sad story. And I'm putting air quotes if you can't notice, because it essentially to me implies that when there's a problem or when there's drama or when there's, you know, any heat, any serious topic to talk about, Sherlon disconnects from Ariana. So Joan starts talking about how she's very sad to see how Ariana is being treated because her son isn't supporting Ariana emotionally. She didn't raise him this way. So immediately we see that Joan is on Team Ariana, which I did love to see. And she puts her foot down and says, you need to truly feel and tell us what you want. Like, you need to feel open and you need to say everything. To which then Ariana brings up everything, you know, how she feels about how it felt like once she got pregnant, everything changed and that he wasn't available to her at that point and that she doesn't know what's going on there. Again, she brings up all the disconnect. And then clearly all the women at the table, aka Joan, Karen, and Ariana, are on the same page. They think that Sherlon's in the wrong and he needs to do right by this. To which Sherlon then replies, you know, all right, ladies, this conversation's making my head hurt, which is his words, not mine. And his mom implores him, you have to do what's right. you have to be honest. And then he tells us he's going to be honest. So he does throw a truth bomb in the middle. He takes full ownership of misleading her. So he basically said that everything you said is true. I get what I want, and then sometimes I lose interest afterwards. And he tells us in confessional that in the beginning, when he did meet Ariana, he did put on a front about wanting a serious relationship and charmed her into thinking he wants a serious relationship. And he didn't mean that. But then when she got pregnant, everything obviously got complicated. And Joan, the mom, does mention that when she sees Ariana hear all this and get emotional, Joan got emotional. Joan welled up as well. And she said that she doesn't want to see anyone get treated this way, especially from her own son, obviously. And Joan does clap back at her son a little bit and says, yeah, so when are you going to settle down? When you're 50? When you're 50, is that what it is? And then this is where Shallan decides to open up a little bit more. And he's like, you know, when I was in 10th grade, I was cheated on. And one of her family members told me that she was cheating on me. And ever since that day, I've put a wall up around my heart, which no one at the table really, really was receptive of, including Ariana, who said, bro, you're a 36-year-old man. I had my heart broken at 16 too, but you move on. To which I said, yes. You know, listeners, if you've ever had your heart broken between the ages of 15 to 18, let me see that hand up. Oh, a lot of hands up in the audience. See, I'm telling you, like, this is true. She's 100% speaking facts. You move on. You mend. You move on. So ultimately, he says he has to work on himself. And he even says, you know, if I would have to see a psychiatrist to make this happen, I will. And we are working on us. So to me, it starts feeling like Shallan is kind of realizing the error in his ways. And I think the big part was seeing his mom be so disappointed and take Ariana's side that really opened his eyes to potentially, you know, realizing I need to do better by Ariana. I really do. So that's good. I'm happy about that. And he also mentions that he wants to keep working on them because he doesn't want to keep Ariana waiting, because that's unfair to Ariana if Ariana's waiting on him. And then we get a confessional from Karen, Ariana's mom, who's been here but has been a lot more quiet than the other three. And in the confessional, she says, yeah, I don't think he's right for her. So she's like, do I think he could improve? Maybe, but if I feel confident about it? No, I do not feel confident about it. So that's what we got there. Okay. And then, basically the next episode, that was the one episode. Then the next episode, Shallan ends up, planning this little date for them and takes her back to where they first met for the first time. And he wants to, you know, bring back the spark, and they start flirting. And, you know, Ariana says, this is the first time we flirted since the conception of Odin. So everything's looking good. Things are looking like they're going in the right direction with these two. And I'm hoping that Shallan has truly seen the error in his ways and isn't going to do wrong by Ariana. And also, thankfully, Karen's in town and she's able to take care of baby Odin. That's why they were able to sneak off on a date. So that's what's been going on with those two. Let's now move on to Amber and Daniel, who had a very big two episodes here from where I'm standing. So we start off with it's kimono night at Amber's place. Amber and her best friend Ashton, who recently moved in, as you might remember, are having a kimono night. And, you know, they're wearing kimonos, they're having drinks, they're having a good time in the kitchen. And then they show us Daniel in the other room on his phone, and Daniel's like, you know, I knew this would happen. I knew this was going to be an issue. And, you know, Daniel has obviously vocalized in the past that he feels like an outsider in his own house. He feels like an outsider in the country he lives in. Like, he feels very much isolated, and this situation hasn't helped. And, you know, Ashton and Amber are having drinks in the kitchen. They're definitely a little bit wasted, just a little bit. And, you know, to the point where Amber yells out cat parade and tries to whip out a bag of cat treats from the cupboard that end up spilling all over the floor. Okay. And ultimately Daniel calls his brother brother David, who lives in Costa Rica, to like talk to him a little bit. He vents about how, you know, he doesn't have a green card, doesn't have a work permit, and, he doesn't feel like he can do anything, and that, you know, Amber's doing all this stuff with the tenant and like they're not really hanging out. And the brother says, well, would you want to come back to Costa Rica? And he, you know, basically says, well, I just don't know what I'm doing right now. So he's very much directionless, feeling like, you know, things aren't in a good place at all. And he goes into the kitchen and he's like, what's this mess? Cause like, obviously there's all the cat treats on the floor. And she's like, yeah, it's your mess. You didn't close the treat bag. To which he says, can we go talk in the room? And she's like, I don't want to. And he's like, well, I'm your husband. Can we just talk a little bit? So he convinces her. They go to the room to talk, but it just becomes a yelling match that was very uncomfortable to watch. Because ultimately, when it comes to all of this, Daniel's like, I don't know what's happening here. I knew this would happen. You're doing this, you're doing that. And like I said, Amber's had a couple drinks. So she's definitely talking louder, yelling almost, but she's yelling. She's like, I don't know who I am. I don't know my identity. I feel completely lost. And he's like, why do you feel lost? Why do you need a break? What's going on? She's like, I need to forget this hot mess. You're not working and it's very hard on me. So obviously we've mentioned before, but Amber bought a house that they're living in. And the whole drama with this couple is that she bought this house and it's a lot of money. They're on financial burden. That's why they have two tenants or two roommates in the form of her best friend, Ashton, and her sister. So, and Daniel can't work. So it's one of those situations where because he can't work and because she feels all this financial burden, there's a lot of stress put on the relationship as a result. And she's just trying to forget. She's trying to forget about the stress, like unwind at home. But Daniel feels neglected. And this keeps at Daniel feels neglected. So then ultimately, Daniel's like, well, you knew what you signed up for when we did all this. Like, you knew the financial burden that was coming. She's like, no, no one told me this. No one told me this. And to that I say, 100%, if you go through the K-1 visa process, you know that this is happening. You know, that you are financially responsible for your spouse. You know what's going on. I think ultimately maybe this house purchase was an ill-timed purchase is what I would say potentially. So anyway, the next scene that happens, we see, Daniel getting ready. He's getting dressed up and, he's going to a softball practice. Apparently Daniel has joined a softball team called the Tampa Gators, and it is a team, exclusively with Venezuelan, members in the team. Okay. And this is something that he's found that makes him feel closer. Like obviously earlier in the podcast today, we talked about how Kobe doesn't have a sense of community or anyone that he feels comfortable around. And this is Daniel's equivalent of that, having the softball team as his. And it's also, we find out that he, when he was 16, he had a chance to become a professional baseball player in Venezuela. But one night he got in trouble. He was hanging out with some bad friends. They were, you know, riding around and the police got involved and he got shot twice, once in the arm and once in the leg, and the dream ended, which was very crushing to hear. But then he sits down with his team members after they do their softball practice and they start giving him advice. And a lot of the advice was along the lines of, you have to be patient with American women. Like, you have to be patient. You have to, you know, you have to work on it, but you have to also be very patient. And I think this made Daniel panic a little bit because he said he's worried he's going to lose her. So he wants to do something nice for her. Like, that's where he's at. Then the next episode we see, it starts off with Amber in confessional talking about how she feels bad for the way that night went. And she has apologized to Daniel since then. And now Daniel's been invited to the softball team's barbecue, a Venezuelan barbecue. And he invited her along to go with him. And I think, folks, this was a very eye-opening barbecue for Amber. So when they get there, she sees that Daniel says, yeah, we serve soup and we serve meat. That's it, out of Venezuelan barbecue. And she has a confession where she's like, well, I thought barbecues were mostly, you know, hot dogs and hamburgers. So this is very new to me. But she, you know, did not complain about the food. She tried the soup. She liked the broth. It was good. Apparently she's a visual eater in that things that look a certain way, she might not eat. So she did not eat any of the solids in the bowl, just the broth. But she liked the broth, so that was good. That was good. Okay. Now she did tell us that she felt out of her element at this barbecue because no one was speaking English. But when I say it was eye-opening, it helped her realize that the struggles that Daniel's been having. She now realizes, you know, when I was taking Daniel with my friends to do this, to do that, and he is very uncomfortable or out of his depths, I get it now because I feel the same way. Like, so she definitely now understands him a little bit better, which I do appreciate. And they seem to have a very fun time at this, at this barbecue, because also some of the conversations that came up, they talked about patients, they talked about this, that, and like a lot of the team is older than Daniel, and a lot of them have gone through the same process. You know, like I've been married this many years, or I married an American woman, and like this is my process. And, you know, so she definitely got a lot of insight to how Daniel might be feeling, and it ended up being very good. And she did also mention in confessional that the financial burden we've taken on is hard. And I feel like that's kind of been getting in the middle of the relationship. I was like, yeah, I can see why that would happen. He can't work. You can work. And then there's relationship stuff that happens in the middle there. So the last scene we see is Daniel has taken it upon himself. He's very happy with Amber coming to the barbecue and understanding him. So he cooked some pork, some mashed potatoes, some veg. He also got them a bottle of wine. He set it up all in the backyard. He was standing at the door with flowers when she came home from work, and it was very sweet. I did love this. Also, he had a little surprise for her. Dun, dun, dun. The work document is here. He can now work. His work permit is in the building. So I'm very excited to see where these two go now that Daniel will have the opportunity to look for jobs and get a job. We'll see if the relationship is on the mend, but it did feel that way, which is good. Now, the next couple we're going to talk about, I might just zoom through them, is Gabby, Abby, and Frank. So this story was the thing I was most excited about. It's the one that drew me in after watching the first two episodes. It's what caused me to say we absolutely need to talk about this show at the end of the podcast. So the fact that I'm going to zoom through it shows you where we are with it. Basically, Gabby found out what Abby's plans were, which was marry Frankie, move to the States. That was the plan. Marry Frankie, move to the States. Now, that didn't pan out, but now she knows, and they separated. They didn't talk overnight. She got a separate hotel room, and we're now following through with the story the day after, and Abby's meeting up with Rodney, who was the one who was there mediating the conversation the day before. And Rodney has more questions for her, basically to find out where Abby's head was at with all this. And Abby tells Rodney that her plan was to marry Frankie and then bring Gabby along afterwards. And Rodney feels like Frankie saw it as an exclusive thing, which I do agree. I think Frankie 100% thought this was an exclusive thing. And she says, well, I feel heartbroken that he didn't show up, and if anyone's a liar, it's Frankie. And to me, it's a little bit of projecting. I'm like, I don't know, Abby. Like, you kind of hid a whole relationship from your partner of 10 years, and you're putting it on him, and you're not taking responsibility, which I don't think is fair. Now, Gabby and Abby have agreed to finally sit down and talk and have a conversation. And yeah, Abby's whole premise here, whole story is, I need to convince Gabby. I need Gabby to know that she was always in my plans, that the plan was always, I go with Frankie, I bring her with me. I go with Frankie, I bring her with me. She apologizes to Gabby about not telling her. And Gabby says, well, I don't want to not have trust with you, but I can't help it right now. And then she has a confessional, Gabby does, where she tells us that she doesn't know if she can fully feel trust between herself and Abby right now, given what has happened, which I don't blame her. Again, relationship of 10 years, your partner was hiding a relationship from you. It's very difficult to wrap your head around. 100% could see that. Now, Abby does, it's, y'all, I do apologize if I keep saying Gabby, then switching to Abby, then Abby switching to Gabby. We are one letter off. So I do apologize. But basically Gabby's upset that Abby didn't just share all this with her, because if this was your plan and I was included, why wouldn't you tell me? And then also she feels very stupid because she didn't notice any of this. It all happened under her nose. Like, so she feels some type of way about that for sure. And then she asks Abby, do you love him more than you love me? And Abby says, no, when I said yes to marrying him, I felt the same level of love as I did for you. I loved you both equally. And then she tells us she doesn't regret loving both of them equally. But then she tells Gabby that now she prefers her over him. And Gabby's like, yeah, because, you know, it'd be just because he said no to you. She's like, no, that's not what it is. That's not what it is. And then Gabby says that she doesn't want to throw the relationship away, but she doesn't know if she can forgive Abby. So that's where they lie. I believe in the next episode, we're going to see Frankie, who's just been absent from these couple episodes. So we're going to see Frankie. We're going to see where his head is at. We're going to see if the story gets anywhere. I truthfully feel like it's not going to go anywhere. I feel like the producers also felt the same way when they got the story, like, oh, this is juicy. And then it just didn't go anywhere. That's where I think it's going to be. And we'll get back to it when we get back to it next episode. And now we go over to Valentine and Carlos, who are having a bit of an upswing in the relationship. Things have been better. We've seen a lot of fighting between the two of them, a lot of arguments, a lot of disagreements, and everything's going better. They are, you know, they're at their getaway. They're having a good time. More conversation does come up, though, about their sex life. So they so far have been enjoying sex without penetration. And Valentine feels like introducing a third person would help. As you remember, Valentine is polyamorous. Carlos is not polyamorous. And Valentine thinks bringing a third person would help because then they could have that element of the sex life added into it, because they're both tops and they, you know, neither is switching. So Valentine brings this up and Carlos is obviously not really about that. But Valentine tries to do a compromise and says, what about we're monogamous for 3 years and then we get a third person in the relationship? Carlos ends up agreeing with this. And Valentine does tell us in a confession that if Carlos shuts down polyamory, the relationship might be over. So the 3 year contract or the 3 year plan is going to be interesting to see how they go about this and where they get with this. But that's what's set up. And then the next moment was very sweet. We see that Valentine has planned a special dinner for them, for himself and for Carlos. And when we get to the venue, Carlos says, how did you know this was I love this restaurant. She's like, I know. I was like, I love that. So they get inside and turns out this is actually a surprise birthday party that Valentine has planned for Carlos, which is very sweet. And Valentine asks Carlos, how do you say come on out in Spanish? And Carlos says, vamos ahora. So Valentine yells out, vamos ahora. And all the friends come out, which was very sweet. So they had this dinner. They're having a good time. And one of the people at the dinner is Carlos's cousin. And Carlos's cousin has come out to the family. And the family, which includes Carlos's sister, were not approving of Carlos as his cousin after that. Now, why is this important? Because the next scene we're going to see is the buildup and the inevitable coming out of Carlos to his sister, which has been planned. So this dinner happens. The next episode, they go to meet up with the sister for Carlos to come out. And ultimately, the episode ends with the sister coming up to them, them meeting, awkward silence. Carlos tells his sister that he's gay, and then the episode ends. So we're going to find out what the sister says next time. Based on the body language and the awkwardness in the room, I feel worried that the sister is going to not be approving, especially because now we know that the sister wasn't supportive of the cousin. So we'll see where it goes. I'm hoping for a 90-day/TLC misdirect here, because I would like for them to be happy and I would like for Carlos to get the support that he deserves from his family. Fingers crossed that pans out. We shall see. Which leaves us with the last couple here, Danielle and Johan, who did not make a feature in the first episode. We're only in the second episode. And I'll make this quick for you. They're about to get married in 3 days, okay? But the new information that came to light last episode, which was they were hanging out with Johan's family, and it was very clear to her that Johan and his family perceive this relationship to end up in Johan moving to America with Danielle and working in America and potentially supporting the family by working in America. Whereas from where Danielle's standing, she had understood that they would live here in the Dominican. This is where we're going to end up living. So this has caused a bit of a rift in the relationship, because now Danielle is doubting the relationship because she thinks that she's a means to an end, that Johan wants to just go to the States and work and send money to his family. And that's his main objective, not them being together. But luckily, they do have a couples therapy session today that they're going to. And the couples therapist is bilingual, so that's going to help them talk about things in more depth. And in this conversation, the therapist does ask Johan, on a scale of 0 to 10, how important is going to you, the USA, to you? And Johan says, from 0 to 10, 20. And she laughs like, oh, okay. So then the therapist does tell Danielle that, you know, it's pretty high up on his priorities here. So the other thing that happens here is that Danielle says, well, I want to know that us maintaining our lifestyle is going to take priority before us helping out your family. Also, in this therapy session, she finds out that Johan bought a fridge for his parents. And she felt like, well, that's something I should have known about because, like, again, like, it's important for us to know these things. If you're going to support your family, I need to know because I'm the one providing money right now. So then the therapist suggests that maybe you can be fiancés for a few more weeks or months and understand each other better before you get married literally in 2 days, which is, again, they're 2 days away from this marriage. That's how that conversation ends. The last scene we see with them, they're on the car ride over to where they're going to get married, and they're getting married tomorrow. And she mentions that she's confused about his intentions. She doesn't really know what he really wants. And he, again, when this happens with these couples, like, he gets a little bit upset about that. And the conversation ends with him saying, well, if you don't want to marry me, then don't. Right. So we'll see where it goes, because the plan currently is they're still going to the venue to get married. That hasn't changed. And I think it's very clear to me that Johan sees more opportunities living in New York and working there than working here. He thinks there'll be more money. He can support his family. He can contribute to their house. But Danielle doesn't see it that way. I feel like Danielle was thinking of just moving here and settling in a more of a free living than living in the busy, busy streets of New York. So we'll see where these two go ultimately. But that does bring us to the end of the Love in Paradise coverage. We actually ended up being a decent amount of time. Look at that. So everyone, before I leave, first of all, thank you so much for listening this far. If you have, next up, please leave a rating and review for the podcast. It does help people find the podcast. It would mean a lot to me. 5 stars are better, but any feedback I can get, I'm thankful for. You can go over to robswebsite.com/90dayfiance. That's the number 9, 0 day fiance to leave a review. Would appreciate one other order of business here, folks. 90 Day Fiance has released a new franchise on Discovery Plus. It's called 90 Day Fiance UK. That's right. The UK has now started their own franchise. It is season 1. I believe 2 episodes are out. What I want to know from you, the audience, is would you rather we continue with the Love in Paradise stories, or would you want for me to switch over to 90 Day UK? I haven't watched 90 Day UK yet, but what I've seen online is that it's a very good season. It's a little bit more akin to old school 90 Day. So I'm definitely intrigued to watch it. But what I would want to know is which one of these two would you like covered at the end of the pods? I can't cover both because that would make this podcast 3 hours long, and I don't think anyone needs or wants that. So we would have to decide on one. If you want the storylines for the Love in Paradise and you're like, well, I'm already invested in this, let me know. If you're like, yeah, you know, the storylines have been fine, nothing like too special, let's see what the UK's got to offer, I'm willing to go that way as well. It's up to you, the listener. If I don't get any feedback, I'll just continue with Love in Paradise until I hear otherwise. But yeah, that's where we're at, everybody. Thank you so much for being aboard the Hot Mess Express. I really do appreciate it. I'll be back next week to talk about what I'm assuming to be the finale of 90 Day Fiancé OG before we get into the 2 tell-alls that'll follow it. But until then, take care. Have a good one. Bye.